life at all. Enclosed beneath the lumbering trees, the swamp grew darker. The canopy shook with the wind, but below it, the air lay still. After some miles, the way ahead brightened as swiftly as if the sun were passing from behind a cloud. The colors of flame and soot appeared behind the trees, and then the trees were gone, and the sky opened above them, and the swamp came, at last, to an end. Blaze rested his paddle on the gunwale. "We're supposed to walk into that. Are you sure there isn't a safer route? Like, off the edge of a cliff?" The landscape was a slope of rock as jagged as the just-cooled stone on the north coasts of the main plagued island. Most of the rock was shiny black, but it was streaked with the colors of flame, the more distant of which seemed to dance in the sunlight. After weeks in the flatness of the swamps, the heights seemed monstrous, like a vast black wave about to pound down on the shore. Not a single tree, shrub, or blade of grass grew from the land, except on the very border. There, the division between the hills and the not-hills was as stark as if it had been cut by a knife. Everything to the northwest was barren, but on the few blobs of earth that extended from the southeast of the line, yellow spring flowers bobbed their heads in the wind. "We're here," Volo said, then blushed. "In case you hadn't noticed." Blaze reached his paddle across the border, nose tilted back like he was expecting the instrument to burst into flames. "Is it remotely safe to go in here? This place looks like an army of demons has spent the last 1,000 years barfing in it." Dante shielded his eyes against the sun. "Does anyone see any golden streaks? Volo, is this Frog's Reach?"
"Sure is," she said. "And so are the 20 miles to either side of us. The frogs like it here because the fish don't."
"Frog's Reach is that big?"
"I don't think people are that concerned about giving a name to every little piece of land they never go into."
It would have been nice if Fade had mentioned that. Then again, I suppose he was a little preoccupied with stopping his granddaughter from getting slaughtered like a pig. Dante squeezed his temples with one hand.
"We've got 2 jobs here. First, we find the trail, and second, we figure out if it's safe to follow it. The answer to the second question may be before us."
Gladick extended his knob-knuckled finger.
"Consider the insects."
Dante peered into the sunlight, uncertain what he was looking for. Gnats and flies weaved through the air on their drunken little missions.
"What am I looking at? A bunch of pests?" "A bunch of pests who cross the boundary without falling on their backs and crossing their legs above their bellies."
"So it isn't so treacherous after all," Blaze said. "It must be sheer coincidence that the hills don't have a single bird, mouse, tree, or blade of grass on them."
"If it's that poisonous, you might finally be able to get the mold out of your small clothes."
Dante called to the nether.
"I'll see if I can find us the path. Then we can argue about who has to go first."
He knocked down 2 dragonflies from the countless number of them that were cruising around, then reanimated them, sending 1 along the border to the southwest and 1 to the northeast. Unsure how bright or conspicuous the gold markings might be, he leveled the insects out at just 60 feet up, moderating their speed. Ether and nether stirred behind him. After a moment of panic, he realized that Gladick was poking at the boundary of the hell-painted hills, seeking answers. Within 10 minutes, Gold glinted in the vision of the northbound dragonfly. Dante descended, confirming that the color was a part of the rocks, rather than a lost piece of royal jewelry, then swung the insect about to fly directly away from the boundary and into the wasteland, gaining altitude as it went. 200 feet further into the hills, a second blotch of gold shined from below.
"Got the trail," Dante said. "It's only a few miles north."
As they paddled toward it, he recalled the second dragonfly, sending the one that had found the gold marking inland as fast as it could. By the time they'd gotten the canoe up to the first marking, the inland-bound scout had crossed a good 10 miles of the hell-painted hills. In all that time, it hadn't seen a single sign of life. Not even bones. A lobe of grassy land extended from the barren border. They brought the canoe up to it and climbed out.
"I'm still on the trail,"
Dante motioned into the hills, "but I have no idea how long it'll be before I find the spires."
"Assuming Fade was telling the truth about them being here," Blaze said.
"He was," Gladick said. "I have no doubts."
"Why would you? After all, why would a man lie to save his family?"
"Would you like to make a wager on the matter?"
Blaze grinned.
"Since when were Bressel's high priests allowed to gamble?"
"Bressel is no longer Malish, is it?"
"Nor part of the Malish faith.
Hence, I have no church left to answer to."
"If it's good enough for you, who am I to argue? The only problem is I've spent all my money in this damn place."
Blaze rubbed his chin, then brightened.
"Aha! Penny-pinching Dante over there always has extras hidden away, probably tucked behind his balls. I'll bet you 10 of his silver that the spires aren't here."
"You won't," Dante said.
"As an agent of the Citadel, I haven't been paid in months. Fork it over, and I won't charge you interest on what I'm already owed."
Dante was too distracted by his dragonflies to do more than don an unpleasant look.
"Very well."
Gladick produced a pouch from beneath his jabot and gave it a jangle.
10 silver. "If Fade Alu was lying, it is yours. But if the spires are there, then yours is mine."
Blaze stretched. "I assume you won't be insulted when I ask to see the color of your money first."
"According to you, cheater would be the least of my crimes."
Gladick made a thoughtful noise.
"Which would, in fairness, only make your suspicion all the more reasonable."
He opened the pouch. Having only one hand, he was obliged to pour the coins into Blaze's palm. Blaze inspected them, then dropped them back into the bag.
"Well, I know whose corpse I'm looting first."
As the two dragonflies zipped their way deeper into the phantasmagoric hills, Gladick hunted through the grass until he found a shield-shaped green beetle. He placed it inside an empty, narrow-mouthed ink bottle, then walked to the knife-sharp edge separating the live land from the dead stone. He set the bottle on a naked black rock and stepped back. Mile after mile of black slag land passed beneath the dragonflies. The trail of gold blots carried onward, spaced irregularly, sometimes as much as an eighth of a mile apart from each other. Sometimes, however, 2 to 5 of the marks were clustered within a few feet of each other. Just as Dante was starting to worry about how much further his scouts could fly before the connection dropped, a spot of green drew his eye. Unlike the sharp, jagged angles of the hills, This was fuzzy. He took the dragonfly higher. The greenery poured down the side of a slope and into a valley, forming a circle of trees and grass hundreds of yards across. Within it, a ring of towers jutted from the hillsides like the spokes of a cage with its roof torn off.
"Bad news, Blaze," Dante said. "You owe Gladick 10 silver.
"I don't see how that's bad news for me," Blaze said. "Go on and pay the man. And if you have any decency, wash the coins first."
"The other bad news is the spires are at least 20 miles in, maybe 30. Even if we..."
The dragonfly's sight blacked out. Dante felt for his connection, but it had been snipped like a loose thread as it had been right about to pass over the edge of the trees.
"Lost my scout. Probably closer to 30 miles, then. Of some of the worst terrain I've ever seen. We'd be lucky to make it in 2 days. 2 days in a land that supposedly kills everyone who hangs around in it for more than a few minutes. Volo, how long were you and your friends in the hills before you turned back?"
She scrunched her mouth to the side.
"More than an hour, less than 2.
"Excellent," Blaze said. "Then all we have to do is cross 30 miles of horrific terrain in under 2 hours to get to the spires, which may or may not be just as toxic themselves."
"I think it's okay," Dante said. "They have plants there. Trees.
Whatever's keeping life out of this place doesn't impact the spires."
"Mind set at ease, then. Race you there."
"Maybe it's just superstition that's keeping people out. That and rough terrain."
"People explore everything. They'll travel for hundreds of miles across the ocean, which is essentially a bottomless pit of salty poison. If the hills were safe to travel through, someone would have found out by now."
Gladick moved to the boundary, crouched, and picked up the ink bottle. He returned and held it before them.
"Behold!"
The green beetles strolled around the bottom of the bottle, antennae twitching.
"It lives."
Blaze placed his hands on his thighs and bent in for a closer look.
"So, you're saying all we have to do to survive the hills is turn ourselves into beetles?"
"Young Volo has already ventured into the wastelands for a modest period of time without suffering harm. If we begin to feel ill, we will do as her friends did, and turn back."
"Is this the brightest way to go about this? What if we sail to Bressel, kidnap one of the Drakebane's pet Odosein, then bring him back here? You guys can tie him to a pole and wave him at the lich while I move in for the stabbing."
Gladick took down the corners of his mouth. He turned his back to them and waded through the grass toward the boundary. As he neared the line of blasted rock, he wavered, then set his shoulders and stepped across. He tilted back his head and breathed through his nostrils.
"Wait here, then. I will return with an acolyte of the Odosein, or not at all."
He walked onward into the fiery kaleidoscope of stone. The wind ruffled his hair. He didn't look back.
"Gods damn it," Blaze said. "Are we about to let a crazy old man shame us into committing suicide?"
Dante shrugged.
"Look at the bright side. If we drop dead, you can spend the next 900 years in the mists calling him a moron."
He braced himself and stepped onto the black pan of rock. There was no thunderclap from above, no wilting in his chest. Blaze did some swearing and joined him. Yet as they made to follow after Gladick, Volo remained standing in the grass, her eyes wide as she stared down at the lifeless ground before her.
"What's the matter?" Blaze called. "So what if this place was hostile enough to drive out the White Lich? It's probably safe for squishy little humans."
Volo didn't look up.
"When I joined the maggots, we were told we had free current to go anywhere in Tanaratane except two places. The Gokaza, and right here."
"You can stay on that side, if you like," Dante said. "You've taken us far enough." She stamped from one foot to the other, then slapped herself on the face.
"I can't walk away. If the monsoon hadn't gotten me to trick you into helping them, then maybe none of this would have happened."
Baring her teeth, she stepped over the line separating life from nothing. She froze for a moment, as if coming face to face with a bear, then hurried after them.
"Come on, if we move fast enough, maybe I'll forget this place wants us dead."
Gladig hadn't slowed down for them, but despite his spryness, the others caught up with little effort, making good time over the gently sloping land as they moved from the first gold marking to the second. A quarter of a mile in, the ground shot upward in a series of blade-like ridges and deep valleys. Blaze came to a halt.
"Anywhere else, and I'd say we should take the ridges. Valleys would be choked with more shrubbery than a brothel's merkin locker. But somehow, I don't think undergrowth will be a problem here."
"There's not even any rubble in them," Dante said. "It's just solid rock, like it was draped on top of whatever was here before.
Or the surface was melted, like a good cheese."
"Cheese," Volo said.
Blaze gaped in horror.
"You don't know what cheese is?"
"That's the real reason that Drakebane seized Bressel, isn't it? Not to escape the White Lich, but to get his hands on Bressel's famous Temple Yellow."
Dante scowled. "Will you stop making me think about cheese?" The valleys would be protected from the wind, but their rear walls looked too steep to climb. They hiked up a ridge instead. The sunlight was only mildly warm on its own, but the black rock baked like a fire was crackling beneath it. Completely exposed, with the limbs bare, the four of them were soon sweating like a stone brought up from the spring house.
"I don't know what's worse," Blaze said. "The sun or the footing? It's a damn good thing we have these rugged sandals to protect our feet from the jagged, jagged rocks."
Dante already had an oozing scrape on one of his toes.
"Let me know if you hurt yourself badly enough to need the nether. The code word will be, oh hell, I just sheared off three of my toes."
With the worsening ground, they had to place each step carefully, cutting their pace by a third. As Dante's jabot dampened with sweat, he summoned a shadow sphere above their heads, flattening it and stretching it out until it was the consistency of a thick mist. With the sun blocked, the wind dried their sweat, suddenly cold. The slope leveled out. They stopped for a look around. Behind them, the swamp was a mat of treetops, water sparkling from beneath the growth. Ahead, the land rolled on and on, each hill a little bit higher than the one before it. Volo buckled her knees, reaching for the ground with one hand as if she might collapse.
"What's wrong with this place? Why is the ground all bendy? Is that from the magic?"
"Disturbing news," Blaze said. "Everywhere is like this. It's your swamp that's the weird place."
"How can that be? If it's all a bunch of bare rocks, how can your boats get anywhere?"
"Because we put wheels on them, and build little streams for them. Except, instead of water,
We use bare dirt or paving stones. We call it roads.
Volo regarded him suspiciously, then bit her lip. If the rest of the world is made of land and hills, why is ours so different?
You should be happy about that, Dante said. Coming from a unique place has made your people unique, too.
He didn't tell her that it might not always have been that way, that the lifting of the Wodans and the great changes that had seemed to have flooded across the land in the years before and after the last coming of Selin might have forged Tanar Etain from something more mundane into its current shape. So that if not for his forebears, the land might never have been locked away from the rest of the world, to become the breeding ground for the White Lich. They moved down the ridge and ascended the next. After so long in and around water, Dante found himself with an odd case of sea legs. On the positive side, though the rills in the ground were as sharp as knives, there was no dirt or grit to slip on. A few grueling hours and miles onward, no one had reported feeling any signs of illness. Was it superstition that kept everyone out of the hills? Maybe there had been an enchantment protecting the land, but it had faded away long ago, while the memory of it lived on. Whatever the case, other than a general sense of exposure and the low-grade anxiety of being in a place that would offer a person no hope of survival if they were to get lost in it, everything seemed normal enough. Gladig had brought the beetle in the inkpot along with him, and it showed no signs of trouble. Sunset poured across the land, the oranges and reds matching the smears of color on the rock. None of them had seen an uninterrupted sunset since the last time they'd been in Aeris Ossis, and they watched it until it was almost all the way down, before descending into a valley where they'd be out of the wind.
We're somewhere over a third of the way there, Dante declared once they got a tarp up and had progressed to arranging their blankets in a futile attempt to spare them from the hardness of the ground. We'll want to be out before dawn if we want to avoid spending a second night here.
Because of the invisible wolves, Blaze said.
You've not seen them too?
Stalking after us, unseen, howling to each other, unheard. When they bite us, it might not look like they're doing any harm, but that's only because you can't see the blood.
Dante wrapped his blanket over his shoulders. The wind had driven the humidity down, and the late spring evening was much colder than in the swamps.
It's about more than the hills themselves. We're going through our water faster than I thought we would. We'll have to ration it until we get to the spires.
Volo got a funny look on her face.
Ration water? You guys make it sound like you've had to do this before.
Nobody tell her about the deserts until the morning, Blaze said. Not unless you want to carry a wet blanket the rest of the way to the spires.
They arranged a watch schedule. More than watching for intruders or animals, it was to observe each other for signs of illness, and did their best to sleep on the mercilessly uncomfortable ground.
Dante got up for good a few minutes before first light. His thighs and feet were achingly sore. He was usually the first to get up, but Blaze was already sitting up and blinking his eyes, and Gladick had had last watch. He sat at the edge of the tarp, illuminated by the tiniest trace of ether.
Dante shuffled over to him.
How's the beetle?
Gladick lifted the ink bottle to the light. The green beetle twitched an antenna, but was otherwise still.
Sluggish. From the aura of the hills. Perhaps. But I pray that if I were confined to a bottle without sustenance for a day, that I would be doing half as well.
How are your legs? Strong enough to travel.
Gladick smiled thinly.
I have eased my soreness enough to continue. But your concern is appreciated.
Dante roused Folo. They ate and packed up. Gladick lit the way onward with the ether until the sun broke clear of the eastern ridges. The hills were as rugged as ever, yet they made steady progress.
Dante kept the fog of Netha over their heads to protect them from the sun, but the day warmed quickly, and sweat trickled down his sides. Limiting himself to scant sips of water, he found his hands were shaking. Late that morning, they stopped in the shade of a cliff to rest.
Dante had been keeping his remaining dragonfly relatively close to ensure that they weren't wandering off course, nor that there were any unexpected threats lurking ahead of them. Meaning to see how far they had to go, he sent it whirring along until it spotted the pocket of greenery that made up the silent spires. To the best of his judgment, they were 10 to 12 miles out, doable by nightfall, if they pressed hard. He sent the dragonfly closer, searching for the best approach by foot, as well as any defenses they might have. As soon as it flew above the outermost trees, it blacked out.
Dante swore. Just lost my other scout. To what? Blaze said. The invisible airwolves?
It wasn't far enough away for the link to degrade. It dropped dead at the same spot as the first one. Something stopped it.
And this upsets you? Sounds to me like it's proof they've got active Odosain there.
A half mile later, as they trudged up an incline as steep as a set of stairs, Volo's right sandal snapped, spilling her to the ground. As Dante swept away her cuts with the nether, Gladick waved his hand, restoring the sandal with a glare of ether. Yet the strap wasn't pristine, merely reverted to a state of being heavily worn but not quite broken. It looked as if it would give out after another couple of miles. Even if Gladick used the ether to fix it again, the state it was returned to would be more worn than it was now, meaning it would break again even sooner, with the cycle repeating until the ether could do nothing at all. Dante bent his mind to the problem, yet it vexed him more with each minute that passed. Broken things could be fixed by hand, but only if you had the materials to replace or reinforce what had worn down. There were no plants here to work with. Should they shred one of their blankets to wrap around her foot? Carrying her was out of the question. It would make whoever was carrying her 10 times more likely to unbalance and fall off the ridge. And anyway, even Blaze wouldn't be able to bear her on his back for more than 10 or 15 minutes at a time. An hour later, Volo's sandal snapped again, sending her reeling to the edge of the ridge. Blaze caught her, falling down in the effort. She landed on top of him. Gladick peered at the broken strap in angry confusion.
Why would it do that? Doesn't it know that we need it to function properly?
He snapped his hand back and forth as if he were dueling with a miniature sword. The ether glared at a skewed angle, knitting the strap back together.
Gladick spat on it and walked onward, wobbling a little.
Volo roughly wound the straps around her feet and calf.
This sandal is stupid. Feet are stupid. They should be hard enough that you don't even need shoes.
She ran after Gladick at a speed that seemed much too fast. Dante walked after them, frowning deeply. Could he make her feet harder? Grow a lot of skin on the bottom or something. But he couldn't do that, could he? Unless... What if he drew the rock up around her foot, encasing it in a thin stone booty? He could remove it once they reached the spires. It would...
Stars flashed over his vision. He crumpled to the ground. He'd kicked a clump of rock. His toes were mashed and bloody, and one of the nails was split. It should have turned his stomach, but he wanted to laugh. He muttered to himself. The nether came slowly, as if confused, then settled onto his wounds, erasing them.
Blaze snorted at him. Forget that rocks are stronger than feet, idiot.
Dante got to his feet.
Let's find out if your face is harder than my fists. I could fight using only my face, and you'd still lose.
Dante stomped to within 2 feet of Blaze.
Then let's find out. You want the first swing?
Blaze drew back his fist, mouth twisted into a leer. As his elbow reached its apex, he paused, eyes darting to Volo and Gladik, who watched eagerly.
Dante, Blaze said, there's something wrong.
That you're not bleeding from both nostrils. I'm about to correct that. Dante, look at us.
Dante's nails were digging into his palm so tightly he'd drawn crescents of blood. With difficulty, he relaxed and took a long breath. Across from him, Blaze was wild-eyed, and despite the healthy tan they bore from months on months of travel, he was as pale as a Tenarian.
Gladik was, too. Volo's face was as white as plaster, while her eyes were webbed with red cracks.
Dante could barely get the words out.
We look like blighted.
The anger receded from Gladik's eyes like a spell. He fumbled for his pocket, extracting the ink bottle. At its bottom, the green beetle lay on its back, legs folded over its thorax.
The hills, Gladik said. They have come for us at last.
Blaze groped his own face, as if afraid it was in the act of changing form.
We have to go back.
Dante wagged his head, dizzying himself.
Can't do that. We have to get to the spires. I won't become one of them. It's nearly 20 miles back to the swamp. We'll never make it there in time. The spires are much closer, and there are people living there. It must be safe. For the Odosain, maybe. What if it isn't any safer for us? Then we die. Or we join the Lich's service like the other blighted. Do you want to stand here arguing about it, or do you want to run for your god's damned life?
Blaze snarled, then fought down his anger like he was swallowing his own vomit. He wiped his forearm across his brow and laughed.
We run, then, and hope the Odosain have a beer waiting for us on the other side.
Dante moved to the front of the column and broke into a jog. He drew a knife and cut his arm. Wherever the ridge was too spiky with rocks to run over it, he reached into the stone and smoothed it before them. Behind him, he felt Gladik draw on the ether. Light glowed on Dante's skin. He didn't look back.
What are you doing?
Attempting to preserve us, Gladik said.
Is that going to work?
I operate on the assumption that it will be better than nothing. Whether due to Gladik's efforts or the panic racing through his veins, Dante's head cleared, if only for the moment. He ran as fast as he dared, gaze flicking between the path immediately before him and the next glint of gold marking the way forward. He no longer had a dragonfly to plot their course from above. If they lost the trail now, they were as good as dead. Sometimes, they fell. When the cuts and scrapes were bad enough to slow them down, Dante healed them. When all they were was a little blood, he let them bleed. A thudding redness encroached on the edges of his vision. Every time he stumbled, or couldn't see the next golden marker, rage choked his lungs like he'd inhaled a draught of water. Volo's sandal broke a third time. Gladick mended it with the ether, but they'd been running less than 10 minutes more when it came apart yet again. The next time it hardly lasted 5 before it sent Volo crashing to her knees. She screamed and hurled the broken sandal off the ridge as hard as she could. Gladick spat a curse. "What will you do now, you fool?" "Run until my foot bleeds," Volo said, "and keep running until it stops." She hopped in place, then broke into a dash Dante could hardly keep up with. It wasn't long before her left foot was leaving shiny, dark blots on the stone. Nether darted from Gladick's hand, healing her, if only for another minute. Dante couldn't say how long they ran for. Even if he hadn't been distracted following the markers and smoothing the path, the red fog was suffocating his brain as badly as the haze of the past lands. At some point, Volo lost her other sandal, too. Dante's right foot felt warm. It was covered in blood. Rather than pain, all he felt was anger. He needed to find someone. He needed to hurt them. Bare skin smacked against the rock. Dante glanced back and saw that Gladick had fallen. Blaze and Volo ran on. Dante glared after them, teeth clenched so tightly they squeaked.
"Get up!" he yelled over Gladick's body. "Get up, you worthless shit!"
Drowning in fury, Dante drew back and kicked Gladick in the ribs. The old man didn't stir. Dante kicked him again, hard enough to rock him on his side. His legs jutted from his jabot, as thin as the back legs of a dog, and as wrinkled as a shirt tossed in the corner for days. Pathetic. Dante drew back his foot again. Something bobbed to the surface of his mind. Clarity. He calmed himself, the wrath raging around him like a windstorm while he was tucked away inside his house. The ether came. He let it flow down his body. Everything got better. Dante crouched and shook Gladick's shoulder. Nothing. The priest's skin, the easily tanned complexion of a Malisher, was now so white Dante could nearly see through it. He picked Gladick up. The old man was as light as he looked, and stumbled onward. Blaze and Volo were starting up the next hill. Dante slogged along, only smoothing the path where it was most treacherous. When he reached the top, he had to kneel and catch his breath, sending the nether into his muscles to wipe away their complaints. He didn't catch up to Blaze and Volo for another mile. They were slumped next to an upthrust fist of rock painted with red swirls. They were as pale as fish bellies, and their eyes were closed. As Dante approached, Blaze's bloodshot eyes fluttered open.
"Oh,"
Blaze's voice came out in a croak.
"Was going to ask if you'd carry Volo for a bit, but it looks like your hands are full."
Dante sank down beside him, propping Gladick against the rock.
"When was the last time you saw Mark?"
"Time ago. Some of it."
"Do you remember which way we were going?"
Blaze swung his head about, mouth hanging open, Brows lowered.
Up? Weren't we going up?
Dante grunted.
North. Which way is north?
The sun is there.
Blaze pointed to it. It was currently hanging to their left, painful and yellow, then traced his arm across the sky.
That means it came up over there. And there is up.
North.
Yes. North.
Blaze tried to push himself up, but his legs gave out.
My lower arms aren't working.
Dante thought for a moment, then glowered at the dark stuff until the shadows rolled across their limbs. The fog pulled back a little. Able to think again, he stilled his mind and touched them both with ether, which seemed to help. He meant to turn it on Gladik and Volo, but his supply was exhausted.
Not sure we'll get much further, he said. That was all I had.
Blaze cracked his neck, looking a little better.
Don't worry. Volo and Gladik are already asleep. If we all die, we can tell them it was their fault, and they'll never be the wiser.
They hoisted their charges and shuffled onward. Their progress was creeping. They'd barely made it over the next hill before the red fog stole in from the sides of their minds. Dante pushed on, barely able to see the way ahead, lost in the huff of his breathing and the thump of his wrathful heart. When his legs threatened to quit working, he called to the nether again. He wanted nothing more than to become part of the swirling darkness, to lose himself in its coldness, its hunger for blood. Blaze lifted a shaky arm. Beneath his pale skin, his veins stood out like worms.
Look!
Beyond the next line of hills, a single tree rose into the empty sky. Later, Dante couldn't remember crossing the final leg of their pilgrimage. All he could remember was the rage that seemed to define his every desire. And then, like being splashed with a bucket of water from a mountain-fed stream, it fell away. It stepped out of the hills and into the trees. He set Gladik down and sat, leaning his back against a trunk. Blaze found a spot across from him. The color was already returning to Blaze's skin. Blaze rubbed his hands into his eyes.
Care to tell me what just happened to us? Other than something horrible.
This land kills all life, Dante said. That's the only way the Orsain could turn back the White Lich and his armies.
But the Orsain are long dead. How can their enchantment have lasted this long?
Maybe that's a reflection of just how much they hated him.
In other words, you have no idea.
Correct.
One of Dante's dragonflies lay dead on the dirt, 20 feet away. He reached for the nether, but it wouldn't come. Not because his strength was exhausted, though he knew he was close, but because the power of the Odosain refused to let him. Examining the others, everyone had a few cuts and scrapes on their elbows and legs, and Volo's feet oozed blood from the soles. But he didn't see anything critical, Gladick's eyes fell open. He considered the trees around him, and the towering pillars of stone at the bottom of the valley.
I exist. And I mean to have strong words with the gods about that someday, Blaze said. In the meantime, we've got a job ahead of us.
One that you insisted we do, I'll note.
What is our plan to make contact? To walk into their most secret temple and pray they allow us to live?
I was thinking I'd wait for them to send us a carriage.
Dante pulled himself to his feet.
But now that you mention it, your way sounds faster.
It was another minute before Volo came back to her senses. In that time, Dante didn't see anyone moving in the windows of the towers, or in the green fields around them. There was a dirt path just to their right, and Dante followed it downhill. After the neutral emptiness of the hell-painted hills, the smell of leaves and pollen stopped up his nose like a bung. The path leveled out, delivering them from the forest. Pressure lifted from Dante's shoulders. He could reach the nether again. He was tempted to use it to heal their abrasions, but not knowing what awaited them at the academy, he saved his strength. In an echo of the settlements in the swamps, the grounds of the silent spires were composed of concentric circles. In the outermost ring, fruit trees grew unfettered, festooned with blossoms of every color. Next came a ring of tidy crops, starting to sprout from the jet-black soil. After that came a ring of statuary, well-tended squares of decorative greenery, and a form of pavement achieved by smoothing out the natural rock of the hills into a high gloss, then etching patterns and glyphs into the stone. And within it all rose the circle of towers. 7 in number, they soared 200 feet high, capped by black domes marbled with the colors of fire. Their faces were peppered with arched windows, some of which opened to balconies. All of the rings were empty. There were no workers in the fields, no worshippers at the small shrine that stood in the center of the plaza between the towers. Wind buffeted the sprouts in the fields and tousled the flowers in the gardens. Dante swallowed.
Tell me the Drakebane didn't bring everyone from the spires with him, too.
He'd been angling for reassurance from Gladick, but the priest said nothing. Dante touched the hilt of his sword, pulling the shadows close like a thick blanket on a winter night. He passed into the shadow of a tower, then back into the late afternoon sunlight, as he entered the paved grounds in the middle of the towers. He stopped there, and turned in a slow circle.
Hello? I'm a friend of Tanara Tain. We come seeking the order of the Knights of the Odosain.
A leaf fluttered across the courtyard. The windows stayed silent. Blaze waved his hands above his head.
Hey, people who dedicated your existence to not getting destroyed. Guess what? You're about to be destroyed.
Silhouettes moved within the windows. The tips of arrows winked in the waning sun. Dante shaped the nether into killing darts, but a great blankness slammed down upon him, locking both ether and nether in place.
7. Dante scrabbled for the nether with all that he had, but there was no defying the power of the Odosain. That was the very thing that had brought them to the spires.
Though he, Blaze, and Volo were armed, there was no hope of fighting back. They were exhausted, which ruled out running away, too.
Ah!
Blaze quit waving his hands and held them above his head.
That destroying I was talking about, not by us, by the Aiden Rane.
Archers advanced onto balconies, sighting down the white shafts of their arrows. As many as a score per tower, more than 100 in all.
He tells no lies, Gladik boomed. The Aiden Rane has been released from the iron prison of Rhea Leys. He slaughters your people as we speak. We have fought him, but we cannot stop him. Not without your help.
With the archers in position, quiet overtook the grounds once more. White cloths embroidered with orange patterns hung from either end of the temple in the center of the plaza, flapping away at themselves in a wind that felt as if it might never stop blowing. A door creaked open in the base of a tower across from them. Six men, or women, dressed in hooded white robes, swept from the entry in perfect silence. They kneeled down in two rows of three, arrows trained on the intruders. A seventh figure walked into the light. She wore a robe, or something like it, but unlike the warriors, her arms were bare, and her face was uncovered. She was tall, and neither young nor old. Something in her bearing was so commanding that Dante hardly noticed as another six archers trotted from the doorway to join the others. She walked toward them, the wind pinning her robe to her legs and torso, rippling the orange stitching. Half of the warriors advanced with her, while the others held their bows trained on the four outsiders. After 30 feet, the first grouped dropped into a crouch, arrows knocked, and the others popped up and dashed forward to flank the priestess. She came to a stop across from the four of them. Her light skin and dark hair marked her as Tenarian, but she was taller than most. Taller than Dante, in fact, and nearly even with Blaze and Gladik. Despite being a priestess and one in the middle of a rocky desert at that, the muscles of her arms and shoulders were fit for hard labor. Her stature would have drawn looks, but her face would have stopped feet. She was at least 5 years past the stage of life when nearly all young people were pretty. But that extra time had carved the excess softness from her cheeks and chin, granting her the beauty of a noble warrior. Her eyes locked on Gladik.
Gladik of Bressel, I know you. I do not think so, he said. I would have remembered if we had met. The Drakebane spoke of you. He wasn't sure he could trust you. Yet which of us is still here, in service to your land?
She snorted in a way that Dante found annoyingly charming.
You, a foreigner, stay in our land to fight a battle that isn't yours, while the Drakebane, our emperor, abandons our land because he thinks that battle can't be won. One of you is a very big fool.
I'd put good money on both, Blaze said. Don't worry, my friend Dante will cover me.
You shouldn't have been able to get here. Not without adding 4 more gold markers to the trail. You two are warlocks.
She nodded at Dante and Gladik, then eyed Blaze.
And there's something wrong about you, too, isn't there?
Crippled brain, Dante said. I'm afraid he was born with it.
She nodded again, sympathetically. She frowned at Volo.
You're a roamer. Of the veins? A merchant? No. There's something unsettling about you. Like opening your door to find a single banana has been placed on your stoop. You're with the maggots.
Volo bobbed her head.
Yes, Mom. Did you bring these dirty Harry here? No, Mom. It is, Mom.
It isn't, the woman said. Is the purpose of titles to show honor to those that bear them, or to degrade yourself before your betters, and train you to do their bidding?
Volo straightened her back, looking deadly serious, and a little alarmed to find herself in Dana Kide with someone of the woman's stature.
Do we know who first invented titles?
No more than we know who invented the first floor beneath our feet. Or the first way to tell a man that his mother's a whore dog.
If the first title was invented by the one who bore it, then I'd say it was meant to degrade everybody else. But if it was made up by one of the everybody else, just another commoner, then I'd say it was meant to honor a good person.
And since I already admitted we can't know who invented titles, we can't know their intent. Classic dodge.
She gave Volo a brief and not overtly warm smile.
My title is Bell. I have a name, too, but it's mine, and I don't share it like drunks passing around their bottle. You can have it when you tell me your own names, and why I shouldn't kill you for trespassing in a place where no Harry has ever set foot.
I'm Dante Galland, Dante said, deciding that lying might only get him in trouble down the line, and that he might need to impress her. High Priest of Narashtivik.
If this meant anything to her, she didn't know it.
Blaze Buckler.
Blaze extended a hand, which the bell ignored.
No title attached. Not because I don't deserve one, of course, but because a fancy title would only make it harder for me to do what I do.
The woman tilted her head.
Which is... Save Narashtivik from disaster, when its high priest meddles in something he had no business with.
That's what brings you here? Meddling?
If this is what meddling looks like, Gladick said, then we should all wish for our lives to have more priests and mother-in-laws. As stated, the Aedan Rane has returned. We seek to stop him.
And I seek to find a way to stop aging that doesn't involve dying. I think I'll have more luck at my job than you will.
I'm inclined to agree. Yet we have faced him and survived.
The bell laughed, her pulled back hair swaying as she wagged her head.
Do you even care if I believe you? While you're at it, why not tell me you're my long-lost father? Thus I'm obliged to help you however I can. We got here to the spires, didn't we?
Blaze lifted his right elbow behind his head, stretching it with his other hand.
You know the weirdest part of it all? Between the way his eyes shift between blues and those granity features of his, the Lich is a pretty handsome fellow. I don't normally say that about a glowing giant who's trying to cut me in half with a glaive as big as a church steeple, but it happens to be true.
She smirked, then swung her dark brows together like a closing gate.
But you saw him. You looked into his eyes, and then the clash of weapons, an escape.
How? We had the help of a few of your knights. Unfortunately, they didn't make it out. They fought with great valor, Gladick said. They met their fate precisely as they were trained to.
If you were able to stand against